Welcome, Lund Loyalists, to John Lund Unleashed. Those watching on YouTube, on the John Lund Unleashed and Bay Area Sports Collective channels. Viewers on X, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook, and Lundos listening to the podcast on Apple and Spotify. John Lund Unleashed, brought to you by Reappell Sports Medicine. Got pain? Check out our revolutionary stem cell treatments. And guys, if low T is bringing you down, Reappell Sports Medicine can put you back in the game. Now all juiced up and ready to go, here's John.
There you go, inside job, Patrick Bailey with the game winner. That was crazy. I mean, I know we saw Angel Pagan. I know, ironically enough, Lawrence Butler got one of these, but to see it bounce off the bricks and Brandon Marsh went too far into right field, the ball starts going, it's Patrick Bailey. He's faster than Wilmer Flores, but he's not Jungho Lee, so without a throw. Absolutely crazy last night. People are going to wonder if it can lead to something. Let's just celebrate it and see what happens from there. But there you go, right there, as you can see, Patrick Bailey scores. He gets doused. His uniform gets ripped off him. He does the post-game interview, and he's like, and Laura Britt's like, yeah, we'll give you a second. And then they ask him all the questions. But anyway, the Giants get an unlikely win as they're down 3-1. And really, the ninth inning itself, and we'll get into all of it, but Casey Schmidt getting a hit to lead things off and just everything getting done the way it does. Jungho Lee pops up, but then Patrick Bailey gets the unlikely inside the park Little League home run as the, I think Kanto said this last night, and it was perfect, where triples alley giveth and taketh away. Last night it was in the giveth, giving kind of a mood as it bounced off the bricks. Good morning, good morning, good morning. We've got all the details on the inside job for Patrick Bailey getting the win over the Phillies and now where the Giants stand in the National League. And yes, it is very tight. Episode 186, Bailey's inside job. As you look at the chalkboard there, will that get him going? That's the question that everybody's asking. Clark Endeavors, there's one thing, and we went over this a little bit yesterday, Dave Fleming's brother Will on WEEI in Boston, which is the flagship of the Red Sox, saying that, and confirmed by Will Clark that, yeah, Rafael Devers didn't come out to work with Will Clark, but it's not that simple. And Will Clark actually said something that defended Devers, and everyone's forgetting about that part. It reminds me of a skit on Saturday Night Live where Bill Hader does such a great Keith Morrison, and they're doing the bit, and you probably remember it, and he goes, so-and-so confess, but let's ignore that part because we got to stretch this out. And that's what it is. Like, there's something in there that says why Devers didn't come out. Nobody's talking about it. Everybody in Boston's like, see, Devers, Devers, Devers. Anyway, we'll get into that whole conversation as well. Justin Verlander goes to the mound this afternoon. The Dodgers are sucking, which is good. There's going to be an overreaction on Jokic. There is no Kuminga news. Not a lot of NBA news today, but there's an interesting thing on Jokic, which actually we talked about a couple of weeks ago, and I told you it would be an overreaction, and now it is. NFL-wise, it's those three dead weeks, in the NFL offseason, which they do an amazing job, better than anybody, in keeping their sport relevant in the offseason. But there is this part. So ESPN does lists during this thing, and everybody overreacts to lists, even though they mean absolutely nothing. So we'll get into that. Random things happen throughout the show. And the sweet, clean, family-friendly Caboose Pistol, marking your territory. Marking your territory is today's sweet, clean, family-friendly Caboose Pistol, how we end every show. Good morning, good morning, good morning. We'll do roll call in just a second. But remember, please make sure that you're subscribed to John Lund Unleashed on YouTube, as well as hit us with the like before we get out of here today and keep those alerts on because we send out stuff throughout the day. And if there's breaking news, maybe there's a trade or something like that, we always jump on when there is breaking news. So keep those alerts on so you know when we are on. Speaking of those alerts, see that big B in the corner? That is the Bay Area Sports Collective. So that is my show. A lot of XKMBRers. It's my show, John Lund Unleashed. It's also Rod Brooks, Quality Hang, and he does most of his shows at night. It's Polly Mack and Creative Tony, who was our creative director at KNBR. And of course, Polly Mack from the KNBR Morning Show. They do Wednesday night shows, so they'll do a night flight tonight, but you want to know when that starts. So you got to get those alerts on. Tom Tolbert, and in addition, Amy G, and former Giant, Jeremy Affeldt, all with the Bay Area Sports Collective, so they start at different times, so make sure that you have your alerts on at the Bay Area Sports Collective so you know when all of those shows are going on. Thank you for watching this morning on Instagram, on X, at John Lund Radio for both of those. I have a personal Facebook page that we broadcast on, as well as John Lund Unleashed. So if you want to hit any of those on Facebook, whatever platform you like, we're on it. I would just suggest that you come over to the chat room here, hang out with us on YouTube. Please make sure you are subscribed to all your friends and enemies, if you would as well. And again, hit us with the like and keep those alerts on. All right, that's what's going on as far as today. That is the show, as you can see on the chalkboard. Do want to mention that the fine sponsor of the program, and if you hit that QR code right there for Dr. Jeffrey Riopel, it'll just take you to the website. There's no pressure or anything like that. Oh my God, what's happening? Just hit that right there, and you can see the website and all the things that Dr. Jeffrey Riopel and the crew can do for you. Men, women, to make you look better, feel better. My wife is doing, of course, as I tell you all the time, stem cell, and Dr. Riopel was one of the first in California to do stem cell. And it's not me, so it's not firsthand technically, but I'm seeing my wife feel so much better, elbow, shoulder, foot. We talk about this all the time. We've gone on vacations, and she's like, I could not be walking all this, you know, all these miles, all this time without Dr. Riopel. It's, to me, because I've seen it firsthand, it's minor miracle kind of stuff, because we'd sit on the couch, I'd sit on the couch, she'd lay on the couch and watch shows. Netflix and everything, and she'd look like a mummy, like she had just played, you know, in an NFL game or something, and she doesn't have to do any of that anymore. So it's all because of Dr. Riopel. It's all because of the stem cell therapy that he does with her and with all of his clients. And all you got to do is either click on the QR code I just had up there, or very simply use your favorite search engine. Riopel is R-I-O-P-E-L-L-E. Dr. Jeffrey Riopel, R-I-O-P-E-L-L-E. Right there in San Ramon. Make the drive if you're anywhere in the Bay Area, especially in the East Bay. He is absolutely great. So check him out. And again, all the different things that Dr. Riopel can do. It's not just things like that. It's not just the low T that I do with Dr. Riopel. He does, and they do, all sorts of great procedures for men and women. So make sure that you check him out. Use your Google and search Dr. Jeffrey Riopel, R-I-O-P-E-L-L-E. And when you do it, please, this is very important, tell him that I sent you over. He will treat you extra special. So there you go. That is Dr. Jeffrey Riopel, fine sponsor of the program. People who are in the chat room today, and this is at John Lund, at John Lund Unleashed, John Lund Unleashed on YouTube, and you're wondering, where is everybody? Right there. So come over, hang out in the chat room. Scott is here this morning. Joy, it is great to see you. The Nada is here. Tommy, it is great to see you, my friend. Who else do we have in the room? God, we got lots of people in the room today, man. Very cool. Naomi, our favorite, is here as well. Tim is here this morning. Kenny is here. It's always good to see you, man. Finally, the Giants are getting the breaks. Yeah, that was unbelievable. When that ball hit, it was like right when you went, you go, uh-oh. It was great. We'll describe it and we'll talk about it. I want to get your thoughts on it. Shrimp Boy is here this morning. 49ers faithful. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. We are getting closer and closer to a lot of 49ers talk. And like I said, I will be down at 49ers HQ and go into training camp. So I'll give you a firsthand account of everything and do what everybody else does and do videos and reactions and things like that. Mark is here this morning. It is great to see you. Looked like Bailey was hauling ass. Yeah, after he realized after a split second, most parks, he's like, oh, that's a home run. And then he went, uh-oh, that's Triples Alley. And then he started hauling ass, which is kind of funny in and of itself. But, oh, you missed it. Well, you didn't. There's tons of video of it, but it was crazy when it happened. I screamed in my house to my wife. I'm like, you've got to see this. She was like, stop yelling at me. Hurley Bird, good morning to you as well. I don't know. My pronunciation isn't working this morning. John, J.R., Mason, always good to see everybody this morning. Let's get to it. Enrique, good morning. Yeah, we'll do tons of Niners when camp gets going. So anyway, you turned off. I know. I can't blame you, man. I can't blame you for turning it off. Somebody said they turned it off. I lost crew. Yeah, you should. I turned it off after the Bivens. I'm not a Bivens guy. I've told you that for weeks. I'm not a Bivens guy. But anyway, they're having to use guys because of Eric Miller's injury that they wouldn't normally use. Tim Alexander and guys like that. You're like, oh, please no. But look, Bailey came through, so let's celebrate that for today. It is episode 186. And again, good morning. Please put your questions, comments, thoughts on the chat line. And if you want them 100% guaranteed on the show, hit me with a super and support the show. Thank you very much for that. All right, let's get to it. Episode 186, Bailey's Inside Job. I'm going to play this for you because every time I post something from a broadcast, YouTube always makes me take it down after like a day or 48 hours or whatever like that, and threaten me and all that kind of stuff. So I just do this. It's not the best cam job in the world, but this would have been really cool to be at this game. Here is fan cam of Bailey's home run. Drunk guy. Back on the field. There you go. I mean, that's pretty cool. I mean, I would have liked to have been there. That was pretty cool. I've been there at times where, you know, I'm in the booth, and what's great about the booth is it's the greatest media booth in all of sports, and I've been to a ton of them, and it's because it's right behind home plate, so you've seen that whole thing. But drunk guy's like, it's hard to keep your phone going. It's hard to hold it up the whole time. But, you know, you get they get the gist. But the thing that was cool about it was, so you're sitting there and, you know, there's one out and you're thinking to yourself, let's be honest, right? He's going to ground down doing double play. They're going to lose 3-1. This game is over. Then he hits it and he stands there for a second. And I thought the same thing. And I think most people did, was that's gone. And then it clicks into your mind instantaneously. That's triple's alley. That's not gone. But I did think that he was going to get a triple. Then you see the ball ricochet, like, and Marsh played too close to right field. I don't know what he's thinking, because if it bounces straight back, then you either need to be behind the plate. He was kind of nowhere land. So then the thing ricochets back towards center field, and then you got Angel Pagan thoughts, right? Because Angel Pagan's ball in 2013 did a very similar thing, except for the center fielder for Colorado at the time didn't play, wasn't playing as far or didn't go as far right. So they had a play at the plate versus Pagan, whereas with Bailey, because there was nobody in center, the left fielder standing over and left, Marsh went too far to right field. All of a sudden, the thing ricochets back to center. He's trying to haul ass after the ball. There's no chance. And you're thinking to yourself, well, Bailey's not fast. He's not slow, especially for a catcher. He's got decent speed, and he's hauling around the bases. And you knew at that point, once it ricocheted, you're like, uh-oh, all bets are off. And I instantaneously also, I remembered that Angel Pagan had that inside the park home run, but to have a walk off inside the park home run, it's unbelievable. That's why, like, when it happened, I'm screaming in my house because I'm like, you've got to see this, because you just don't see things like that. And then there's also a thing out there that popped up this morning. So I want to get your thoughts on what you're thinking during this whole thing. And then where is the, yeah. So Lawrence Butler, the A's, up in Sacramento, starts their game with an inside the park job, and then Patrick Bailey with a walk off, and that's never happened. So nobody started in all of baseball, let alone, you know, a couple of hours from each other. But nobody started a game with a walk off like Butler. Nobody's ended a game on the same night with a walk off like Patrick Bailey did. So there you go, history being made. And then here's another funny thing. I'm throwing all this stuff out at once. I'm sure you've seen this, but StatCast. You know, you look at home runs and StatCast says, okay, well, which is a home run, which is not, in what park? So here's the StatCast of Bailey's home run. There it goes. Castellanos. Marsh goes too far over, like I said. Marsh finally gets to the ball and Bailey scores. But here's the fun part. All right. How many parks is that a home run? Green is a home run, obviously. Dun, dun, dun. The only ballpark it's not a home run, at least over the wall, is San Francisco. So who's going to tell StatCast? So that was the only park where he wouldn't have had to run around the bases to get the home run. Now, clearly, he did run around the bases and get the home run. But the only ballpark in baseball that it doesn't go over the wall is San Francisco and Oracle Park. And let's be honest. I mean, it would have been cool if it went over the wall. We've seen it, though, right? We've seen it. To see a catcher go around the bases and have to run like Patrick Bailey did. And then after the game, they're talking to Patrick Bailey. And he's like, could you imagine if the average person, because I think to myself, well, it's not that, you know, you're running around the bases. Kids do it after games all the time. What's the big deal? It, you know, I mean, your adrenaline's pumping. I wonder what he was also thinking. They didn't ask him this in the post-game press conference, but so he's past shortstop, right? He's running and he's past shortstop and he's seeing Matt Williams go, 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 go. And he's thinking, are you friggin' serious? Like, it's triple's alley. I'm pretty sure that I tied the game and got a triple. You're telling me to go? I got to keep running. So, I mean, he's going balls out anyway. And how many times has Patrick Bailey in his entire life ran full speed around the bases? I'm sure it's been a while. And so he's thinking to himself, damn. And he did a pretty nice job. I mean, he grounded that bag pretty hard, but there wasn't even a play at the plate. I mean, he had to be also when he rounded third and he's hauling ass home and he's not seeing anybody go like this, you know, hit the dirt, hit the dirt, hit the dirt, hit the dirt. I look like I'm some kind of a bird. But he's like, hit the dirt. And nobody. Everyone's like, you got this. And he's got to be thinking to himself, what in the hell happened? I'm tired as hell, but my God, what the hell happened? Then he gets tackled. The Gatorade gets dumped on him the whole nine yards. And the Giants win that thing. That is the most exciting win that they've had in, I don't know, since Angel began in 2013. I mean, if it had gone over the wall, like we just showed StatCast, if it had gone over the wall, that'd be cool. You know, home run, walk off, everybody goes crazy. But that's a better way. I mean, that was incredible. So anyway, give me your thoughts on what you were thinking as you were watching that thing go down last night. That was pretty cool. And I'm with you. I'm laying on my couch. Everyone's kind of winding down for the day. I think that Patrick Bailey's going to hit into a double play or something like that because that's just what he's doing. And he's had very uninspiring and uneventful at-bats. And so I'm thinking, this is good. You know, this is it. They're done. This ain't happening. And Patrick Bailey hits that walk-off. And I wouldn't even say it was a Little League home run. I mean, it was just like a Little League home run is like, you know, somebody makes an error or, you know, somebody overthrows a base. That's a Little League home run. I mean, that was straight up. That was real for Bailey's second of the year. And I don't care how long he plays in Major League Baseball, he's never going to have a better home run than that. You could hit one to 500 feet. It doesn't matter. Now, maybe to win a World Series or a playoff game or something, but I mean, as far as a regular season hit, doesn't get any better than that. Doesn't get any better than that. So give me your thoughts. He's got a Hemi under the hood. I mean, for a catcher, that ain't bad. I mean, he's got decent speed. Now, if that's Wilmer Flores, I don't know if Wilmer Flores is scoring on that, but not bad. Not bad. So anyway, give me your thoughts on that. Let me go through this because I want to talk more about this, but just an amazing. Do I have anything else on that? So I gave you that. I gave you the StatCast thing. Yeah, this is the thing right there, but I just played StatCast for you. So 29 of 30 parks, it's an over-the-wall home run, and he had to run it out in the only – I'm sure he's pretty happy about that. He's like, come on, man. I mean, given that he scored, he's fine with it now, but he was probably like, come on, man. I got to run this thing out. So anyway, that was cool. Oh, here's Bob Melvin. Here's Bob Melvin on his struggles, and yeah, this will lead us into the next one because there's Bailey's inside job. Will this get him going? That's the second question I have there on the chalkboard. Here's Bob Melvin addressing that.
Had the best offensive year.
Yeah. You know what? He hasn't, but he has gotten some big hits this year too. In big situations, he's come through. Not as much as he'd like, and certainly, you know, hopefully that's something that catapults him. It was a really good swing. We haven't seen him drive a ball like that in a while, but he was ready for it and got a good pitch to hit, so... You know, those are the type of at-bats that hopefully can get somebody going because we all know he has the ability to hit.
All right, so that's the next question, right, is what can this do for Patrick Bailey? I don't believe in momentum, for example. Justin Verlander is going to pitch today. We'll get into that in just a second. And last time out, he was not very good. Two times out ago, he should have had a win. You know, it's just he's 42 years old, and he's going to pitch inconsistently. So we'll get into that in just a second. But as far as Patrick Bailey, I don't believe in, okay, he gets a hit, it gets him going. Maybe it does. I mean, we're seeing right now Willy Adames, he's putting great swings on the ball. He got ripped last night on his first swing. A lot of ballparks, that's a home run that he hits. All of a sudden, Jetstream just gets the ball and just holds it up there, and it's an out. So too bad for Willy Adames. But you can see Willy Adames, and I've said this about Adames before. I think that the ballpark kind of messed with him, even though his road and home splits are just about the same, not very good. But he's been hitting for about a month now, and you start saying to yourself, okay, and I can't remember if there was an exact moment that got Willy Adames going because it really doesn't work like that. I mean, we tried to go back to a certain saying, well, he hit a home run, and then he got going or whatever. Maybe, you know, if you asked Willy Adames, and I'm surprised somebody hasn't, like, what's gotten you going? I'm sure it was something in the cage. It might have been with the much maligned, and I've said it a million times, Pat Burrell. Maybe it was somebody within the organization. Maybe it was something. Maybe it was a player. Maybe it was somebody watching him in the cage going, hey, how about this? How about this? There had to be some subtle change. And maybe it was a mental thing. Maybe he just said, look, this ballpark is what it is. I've got to just get over it. Because Rafael Devers, for example, walked into that press conference and he knew that he was going to be asked a bunch about the ballpark. And he just mentally, and this is where these guys separate themselves from me and you and everything else, mentally, he just said, look, it's not going to affect me. And that's the way you've got to go into this ballpark. But I think that Willy Adames, there was some mental side to this and maybe he's gotten over it. But reality is he's starting to hit. Now, can a specific moment like this show Patrick Bailey, look, man, there's a guy for the Phillies and they have more of a closer by committee situation. It's not like they bring one hammer out there and you got it off him. But the guy last night was still throwing 96 to 98. It's a ninth inning situation where you don't get a hit there or you hit into a double play, the ball game's over. So confidence is everything in life. There's no doubt. So if he goes up to the plate and he thinks to himself, hey man, last time I was here, you know, I hit the hell out of the ball. You know, forget for just one second, if you can, that, you know, the ricochet did what it did and he gets an inside the park home run. As Bob Melvin said there, that ball was smoked. He hit that ball hard. And so that's what I'm sure the Giants are saying to him today. Hey, man, that's the swing. You got this. You can hit. And it's true. When he first came up, everybody did talk about his defensive abilities, but he was hitting. If you remember when he first just came up, he was hitting. And people were like, Stu can hit. I knew he's a defender, but he can hit. And he hit pretty well at North Carolina State. So, you know, I've said this all along with Patrick Bailey. Just can't be a zero. And this is a great day. So I'm not gonna say what his future is. And I've said in the past that how much longer can you put up with this with him being, you know, really good defender, but he just can't hit it all. Today's not that day. Today's just a celebration on what a great play and what a great hit and what a great moment for the kid. You feel good for the kid. So I'm not gonna get down on this, that, and the other and whether this can carry on to something. But all that I think fans would ask of Patrick Bailey and hope for, I should say, with Patrick Bailey, not really an ask, it's a hope. I don't know, 220, 230. I think Patrick Bailey is fully capable of hitting 12 to 15 home runs. I mean, we saw the swing. He could be a 12 to 15 home run guy, I think. In a perfect world, he could knock in 60 RBIs. If Patrick Bailey was a 230 hitter, I don't know if I'm asking too much. 12 to 15 home runs, 60 RBIs, and OPS around, you know, low sevens, you know, around average. You know, high sixes, low sevens. I don't know, because what is his OPS now, like 550 or something? Like, it just can't be that. Because at some point, even though Bob Melvin understands the value, the manager as a former catcher, even though the president of baseball operations as a former catcher understands the value of it, at some point, and I've said this before, you're never going to have a hammer lineup with the Giants. It's just not going to happen. You got Adames here. You did a great job with Devers. That's about as good as it's going to get. You're not going to just, guys are all of a sudden going to be like, yeah, I want to play in that ballpark. Willy Adames got robbed last night. Patrick Bailey had to round the bases last night because it was the only ballpark that it wasn't a home run over the wall where he could jog. So guys know that, and they're not going to readily sign here. You're going to have to trade for it. Good job by Buster Posey in getting Devers. So you're never going to have that lineup where you go, well, we're so good offensively in this park that we don't need the catcher to hit at all. That's never going to be the case. So, look, we've seen it from Bailey. I don't think that's too much to ask. I don't know if it's waning confidence. I don't know if he's tired. I don't know any of it. But he can't be a 190 hitter. Like, you just, especially this team. If you're in a hitter's ballpark, if you're in Cincinnati, if you're in Colorado, if you're, like, it wouldn't happen. But you could have that kind of, you could have a catcher that was so good defensively that, okay, everybody else in the lineup, let's say six or seven guys in the lineup are hitting. We're fine. We can have that kind of a catcher, but you can't have that with Bailey. So, look, do I think it's going to spur him on to a better second half or whatever? Probably not. But I do think that he's a capable hitter. That's not a Devers hitter. That's not an Adames hitter. That's not just a capable hitter. Even if he's a below average hitting catcher, that's okay. You just can't be the worst, because – in the offseason, let's say that was great last night. And let's say that it doesn't continue on and he is what he's been in the first half. They're going to have a conversation in the offseason. As great as he is defensively, they're going to have a conversation in the offseason that says, okay, either we've got to upgrade there or offensively, or we've just got to put so many good bats around our catcher, who's basically like a pitcher in the lineup. So how long can we do this? So anyway, I don't want to have a deep conversation about that today, because that was so cool last night. I mean, that was just so cool that he did what he did. And I feel great for the kid because we've had him on our show numerous times, and he's a great kid. He's a really good guy, you know, down to earth kind of a guy, you know, from North Carolina. Like, he's a cool kid. He's a good guy. And he doesn't seem to be, that's the other thing too, why I'm surprised that he's hit so poorly. He doesn't seem to be the type of guy that mentally lets these kind of things get to him. Like, in other words, a guy gets in a slump and he just can't mentally get himself out. And then you see swings like that from Patrick Bailey and you go, well, it's in there. You know, like, there's certain guys where it's like, that dude just can't hit. We've seen Patrick Bailey go through stretches where he can hit. And then the other thing Bob Melvin said there, and I should have looked up the numbers this morning. I apologize. You know, he has at times in his career been a clutch player, not as much this year. Bob kind of caught himself. You know, it's like, yeah, he's gotten some good hits. He is hitting better lately, though. There's no doubt. He's hitting better lately. So we'll see. But for one night, that was incredible. That's one of the best wins, regular season wins, that the Giants have had in a long time. That was very, very cool. Now, momentum is, and let's move on to Verlander. I'll do Clark Devers in just a second. Let me just go down to Verlander because he's pitching today. So then momentum is, as they say, the next day's pitcher. And I'm not going to call this start huge for Verlander because that's overstating it. But he's got to kind of get off the schneid here and get a win. It'd be nice. And it would also be nice, give the bullpen a break. Can he go six innings? You know, Roop was good enough the other night. Which, by the way, did you see the quote? Roop was on a local radio station here in the Bay Area. And everybody who, you know, bitches and moans about Farhan. And this was the biggest thing I had against Farhan, not to go down this road again. But the biggest thing I had against Farhan was, and with a young player, and I've talked to many of them, it's kind of like the Kuminga thing or the Wiseman thing. Or, you know, any kind of young player who has to look over the bench, okay, I screwed up. Am I going to get benched now? Or it's the difference of, look, Casey Schmidt, guys like that, where it's like, look, man, you're just going to play. So just don't worry about it. If you screw up, you screw up. So just don't worry about it. And so Landon Roop said that if he had had some of his early struggles this year, that he'd have been down at Sacramento again if Farhan had been the guy. Like, Farhan just loves playing. You probably know this, but when I was working with Tolbert for a number of years, we had Farhan on every other week and we had some fun with him. And we talk about, you know, fantasy football. He's a big fantasy football guy. And that's how he treated the Giants roster. Like, okay, this guy's not getting it done. He's in Sacramento. Let's bring up this guy. It was just constant churning of the roster. A lot of the churning of the bottom of the roster. And it didn't seem like he treated these people like human beings, which is you got to let guys work through things. And that was one thing that I know that when Buster came aboard, he talked about and Bob Melvin talked about was that, look, these guys are going to have to work out of trouble sometimes. We're not going to constantly put in the reliever. Like, you got to work out of issues. It's going to make you better. And so what they've basically told Landon Roop, I think, because he said this yesterday, was, look, if you screw up, you're in the rotation. If you have a bad outing, you're in the rotation. Now, we can't have you have like a 7 ERA, but look, within reason, you're in the rotation. So just pitch. And it helps these guys relax. And so Roop said, I think it was yesterday, like, if I had had some of these early season struggles, I'd have been in AAA if it was Farhan. So he really appreciated this current regime that has allowed him to kind of work through some of his troubles. So anyway, I don't know how I got on that tangent. But again, Verlander becomes a big start. Can I say that? Verlander becomes a big start today because he needs to get a win. Even though he's 42, even though he's a Hall of Famer, even though he knows, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, he's not going to lose confidence. I know that wins aren't what they used to be, but you got to get a win in the win. You got to get one in the W column, I think, for Justin Verlander. And it's a big start because, you know, give the bullpen a break, this kind of stuff. And with Eric Miller going down and as much as the core of this bullpen has been used, be nice to get Verlander like six innings. Because we're starting to see more and more, and I know Bivens numbers aren't horrible, but as I'm often fond of saying, watch the damn game. Bivens scares the hell out of me. And it wasn't just last night. I've been saying this for a long time. Bivens is not part of the core bullpen to me. And when he comes in, I'm like, ugh. And he gets out of jams a lot of times, but I'm just like, ugh. So we're seeing Bivens and Lucchesi and Alexander and guys like that, and it's like, oh, man. So one is due to Eric Miller's injury. Another is we're just not going to burn our pen. We can't. We're not going to just throw Randy Rodriguez and Duvall and et cetera in there just because. And Ryan Walker's working through it. You know, he's in a lot of non-high leverage situations because they're like trying to get him mentally back on track. But don't get it wrong. They need him. And I said the other day that with the deadline coming up that, you know, they could use a reliever. That's the easiest thing to get. Maybe. but I don't know how much the powers that be are going to open their wallet. If I'm Buster Posey and I'm prioritizing, I got to get at least an average second baseman. I wouldn't mind getting a first baseman. They could use a bullpen arm. They could use another starter, I think, but they're not going to get everything. So you got to kind of prioritize and go, well, what's really important? I think that there's a couple of second basemen out there that, again, are not superstars, would not cost you a ton, but you could get average play out of second base, and I'd be okay with that. And this whole Devers thing, which I'll get into in just a second, that's really going to determine what they can do at first base. And I think if I'm the Giants, look, I got to get Devers healthy. I got to get Devers at first base. That solves that. I get an at least average second baseman. Adames is starting to hit. We know what Chapman is. I'll leave Bailey alone for the day. We know what Ramos is. Lee, I don't know. Every time Jung-Hoo Lee pops the ball up, I think he should have to do 50 push-ups, like right on the field. Like, stop popping the ball up. You're a speed guy. Like, at least get it on the ground. At least make contact. At least, you know, he did this early in his career as a Giant. When he first came to the Giants, he was popping the ball up a lot. And I'm like, no, man, that's not what you want to do. You want to find a hole, but you don't want to pop the ball up. And he's doing that once again. He's lost. He's completely lost, that dude. So anyway, all right, big game today against the Phillies. Again, give me your thoughts on Patrick Bailey. Awesome. Just awesome last night, the way that game ended, man. That was incredible. Really cool. Let's see. Kenny says, it's going to happen for Verlander. The rest of the Giants bats has taken 90 games to warm up. Yeah, look, man, basically the way I look at life in general is what you've done is what you've done. If Verlander can be a solid guy from here on out, and I said this right when he was signed, I didn't expect him to be a number two, like a lot of people were saying. I didn't expect him to be a number three. I expected him to be a back-of-the-rotation guy. He was coming off a neck injury, and he's 42. His name's Justin Verlander. I get it. But the gray coming and the gray beard coming, you know, the scruff, told me that he's 42 and he's coming off a neck injury. And he's deserved better fate in a few of his starts. His last start was not one of them. So he's got it's not only quality pitches, right? It's not only getting through six innings, keeping your team in the game and all that kind of stuff. It's the innings that you pitch. Because right now, as far as the bullpen is concerned, they just got to give that bullpen as much of a rest as they possibly can. And when Logan Webb pitches, we know he will. When Robbie Ray pitches, we know he will. The rest of the rotation, I don't know. You know, Landon Roop is a five and fly guy, keeps him in the game. Birdsong is absolutely a five and fly guy. You're hoping he can keep him in the game. Verlander, you're hoping for maybe you can be a little bit more than that. Maybe you can give a six. I don't expect him to give him more, but can you give a six today? Can we rest the pen a little bit? Because we know who's next. It's the Dodgers. And while the Dodgers lately have been sucking, Milwaukee's been smoking those guys. The Astros smoked them. I mean, they didn't just beat them 3-2. Would the Astros beat them 18-1? I mean, they're not even competitive in these games. That's not going to keep happening. So regardless of what we think, and let me pop this up. Let me share my screen with you if I can. And look at some standings here. I get it. Like, the Dodgers are out there. So this is what it looks like right now. Now, Mets and Phillies are tied for first place. That's why that's there. So the Giants would be a playoff team as we speak. But it's not ill-conceived now because the Dodgers have been struggling so much. 4-6. They've lost five straight. All of a sudden, they're at the 37 loss. We just look at losses around here because you can't give back losses. You can get more wins. So all of a sudden, five is the magic number to me. You get beyond five games, then you can't see the car in front of you. If you're within five games, then we're talking. So now they're within five games. Now they've only made up two in the last 10 while the Dodgers, but you're on a little bit of a win streak here. What is it, 5-6 for the Giants? So after today, if you can get this win over the Phillies, if Verlander can get his first win of the year, all of a sudden now the Dodgers come in and you're at least within some shouting distance. And I'm not going to give them the division quite yet, even with all the struggles of the Giants. If you're within five, you're within shouting distance. Mets and Phillies will win that division, probably the Phillies. The Brewers are just like, we talk about the Brewers all the time. Amazing. Doesn't matter who they lose. They just continue to win and win and win. And what's funny is I keep seeing on these trade deadline talks, like Reese Hoskins or Freddie Peralta or somebody like that. Milwaukee's not trading. If they're doing anything, they're going to add. So this is where the jam starts. So one of these teams are going to win the East, Milwaukee and the Giants. Let's say the Mets, Brewers, Giants. Those are your wild card teams. And then right there's the Padres. In the loss column, they're tied. Right there, the Cardinals are just one back in the loss. And Cincinnati, I'll say they're there because I said the five-game rule. And if I say the five-game rule for the Dodgers, then the five-game rule extends to the Diamondbacks. Although a contradictory thing I say is I'm not talking to you if you're under 500. Like if you're under 500, you're not a playoff team, so get out of here. Cincinnati barely is. Diamondbacks, I don't consider them a threat until you get to 500, and then we can talk. Because if I say that they're if they're in it, then the Marlins are in it, and they're not. So that's what the standings look like. All of a sudden, it kind of struggles against those bad teams. And then you look at it again, and you're like, well, you're within five games of the Dodgers. And the Dodgers are coming up. And by the way, let me do this again. Let me share my screen one more time with you because I got one more thing to show you. Not that I'm jumping ahead beyond today's game. But then there's this. So, again, Lizardo, the former A, who got off to a great start this year. He's got good stuff. But anyway, Verlander. And then you got the three versus the Dodgers. And then don't forget, after the All-Star break, the Blue Jays, who lead the NL East. So you don't get any breaks. And then the wild card leading Mets. Or, well, they're tied with the Phillies. So you could say the NL East co-leaders, to make it sound stronger, the Mets. So you're not getting any breaks. So you finish with the Phillies, playoff team. Dodgers, obviously, the division. Blue Jays lead the NL East. And then after that, you get the Mets. So things are not going to get easier for the Giants. They've got to get things going, and they got to keep things going. They are within shouting distance of the Dodgers as we speak. So there you go. There's the story on the standings. Let me go out and – before I get into this whole thing of Clark and Devers and the thing that people are ignoring here, let me make sure that people are engaged still. Good morning, good morning, good morning. It is John Lund Unleashed on YouTube. I am looking in the chat room. If you want to jump over to the chat room, you can. Please make sure that you're subscribed to the channel. Also, make sure that you hit the like button and keep those alerts on so that you know that when stuff. Yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, maybe 20. I don't know how many ever. But it's like you can't pop it up. And I'm sure they tell them this all the time. You know, lots of times we'll sit here as talk show hosts or know-it-alls, sound like we were like know-it-alls or something. I'm sure the Giants are saying, dude, you know, it's not as simple as you remember when you're in Little League and stuff. Like I coached Little League years and years ago, and it was like, keep your elbow up, Billy. It's like, yeah, you're just going to tell Jung Hoo Lee, don't drop that elbow. Like, they know. I mean, they're talking to him. They're analyzing his at-bats. But as a fan, when he pops it straight up, it drives you crazy because you're not a power guy. So you need to drive the ball. You need to be a gap-to-gap hitter or hit it on the ground, use your speed, whatever the case may be, put pressure on the defense. When you pop it up, it's like, pff, he's doing a massive favor. Hi, AJ. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because they're a wild card team as we speak. Lefty reliever, they brought in Alexander. That doesn't excite me. Third starter, as you said, platoon for Yaz. Second base is ugly. The only reason I'm telling you second base, if you look at OPS by team, I think they're dead last as of this morning at second base. That's why I'm telling you. Let me OPS by position. I did this the other day. It was very thrilling. Let me just pull it up one more time. Position. Let me see if this area, I got it again. So let me do this for you. This is fun. Fun for all. Let's see here. Share the screen. I just popped this up. I knew it. So this is why I'm saying these things. Okay. So OPS, Seattle's first, of course, last at catcher. But it's Patrick Bailey Day, so we're not going to worry about that. Second worst OPS at first base. So, again, first base is Flores, VR, da 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 da. Second base, I think they're second worst at they were the other day. Where were they? Okay, they're not as bad as I thought. Where the heck are they? Wait a minute. Second base. I think – oh, you know what? I reversed it. Sorry. Second base, there we go, Colorado. So where are they? Oh, okay. So they're right there. 607 is atrocious, though. 1, 2, 3. They're tied for fourth worst at second base. So Colorado, my God. How could you be in Colorado and have a 567 OPS at second base? Look at Tyro Estrada has got the most at-bats for plate appearances for Colorado at second base. They have a 567 OPS. So anyway, they're tied for fourth worst at second base. Third base, look at that. Matt Chapman mostly top. They're starting to get better at shortstop, but still not great. Let's see. Left field, they were really high up before the struggles as of late with Ramos. They were up there near the top. See, they're right there. Center field, this is not going to be pretty. Jung Hoo Lee has not been great. Right field, better than you think actually. Boy, look at 498. There we go. I think Aaron Judge is pretty good. 1,084 in right field. DH, let's see, where are they at? There, Dodgers, that's Otani. Anyway, you get the idea. So catching, first base, second base, not very good. Third base, good. Anyway, there you go. That's OPS by position. So the only reason I'm bringing that up is because they haven't been great. So, and I think there's a better opportunity to get a second baseman for cheap than I do think there's a right fielder. And as far as Yastrzemski is concerned, I know we talk about it all the time. He's a fourth outfielder. But for him, he's having a good year and he's good defensively. If they can fix, if Devers can play first base, which we'll get into in a second, and second base, you can get an average guy there, then I think you're okay. That's what I think. Good morning. Good morning. Have I said good morning to the 1420? Good morning to you, my friend. Great to see everybody. Anthony, good morning to you. Pine, I'm not sure if I said good morning to you, but good morning, good morning, good morning to you. All right, let's get into this whole thing about Will Clark. Okay, so yesterday on the show, we play for you on WEEI, which is the flagship of the Red Sox. Will Fleming, Dave Fleming's brother, is a broadcaster just like Dave is, saying that when he was there with Boston, that Will Clark, it was well known that Will Clark came down and to work with Rafael Devers, and Devers didn't come out on the field for three consecutive days. So there's a part of this that I want you to hear, and I'm not saying this is great, but remember, when they did the press conference, everything was kumbaya, and Rafael Devers said he'll do whatever the Giants want him to do. And actually, there were some video of him taking ground balls right after the press conference. However, then the Red Sox came into town, all right? And people are ignoring this fact. And everyone in Boston, because this is what people in Boston do, they're just trying to kick up dirt constantly. We have a little bit of a different media there. I like probably kind of a happy medium or a soft media. You know, I'll give you an example. Listen to the way that this question is phrased to Bob Melvin. Patrick Bailey, I love what he did last night. Incredible. Awesome. There'll be no Patrick Bailey slander on the show today. But listen to how this question is phrased, and it'll just show you how soft our media is here.
Actually, I mean, he hasn't had the best offensive year.
Yeah.
Okay. The question is, he hasn't had the best offensive year. And then Bob's like, yeah, like, I know what you're trying to ask, but you're asking it very nicely. And then he goes on and talks about Patrick Bailey, and, you know, he's had some at bats and he's made some. Look, in any other city, they'd have just said, look, Patrick Bailey has been terrible with the bat this year. Can this lead to something? Can this at bat lead to some confidence where he can get his bat going? Like, they would just ask the question directly. And again, I'm not ripping it. I don't know who that person is, but it's just, that's the way the question was asked and phrased here. He hasn't had the bet. Look, his OPS is 550. The dude's hit like a buck 85. Like, he's sucked. You can just ask the question. Bob Melvin knows. They're looking at the film. They're trying to help the guy. They know. You don't have to, like, soft foot it around that Patrick Bailey's been terrible offensively. There will be no Patrick Bailey slander on the show today. But my point is that's the way it is. Right? That's our media versus like an East media. And I've lived there. I've lived in Detroit. I've worked in Pittsburgh. I've worked in, you know, I've done national radio. I worked in Detroit. It's negative, 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 negative. And the more negative it is, the higher the ratings go. I don't know how it goes that way. It doesn't work that way here. The better the team does, the higher the ratings go here. The worse the team does, the lower the ratings go. And we find other stuff to do. We go drink wine. We go to the beach. We do whatever. We just say it's not worth our time. Now the hardcores, we stay. But I'm saying the general people who can make it, like, we're going to be here. So that's that meant much fans. But when the team's really good, then there's that much more interest in them, and that drives ratings up. In negative cities that I've worked, Pittsburgh, Detroit, places like that, it's weird to say, but the worse the team does, the higher the ratings go. They love being miserable. It's just the way it is. So Boston's that way. So they love controversy. So it's nothing against Will Fleming. That's just the market that Boston's in. So he comes out and he says that Rafael Devers wouldn't work with Will Clark. And so that becomes the narrative because nobody bothers to go and listen to actually or watch what Will Clark actually said. Now, we know Will Clark here, and he's a bit bombastic. And so he's with our good friend Eric Burns, and he's on the No Filter Network. And Burns, he asks him about that deal. Now, this is what he says, but there's a little bit of subtlety that people, it's not even really that subtle, that people are missing. So let's go back and hear what Will Clark has to say about when he was supposed to meet up during the Red Sox series with Rafael Devers.
Melvin want me to go out there and work with him around first base. No problem. And we weren't gonna like go through anything physical. We're just going to walk through and say, hey, look, if throw's coming from over there, stand this way. If throw's coming from over there, stand that way. It wasn't going to be this big thing, right? And Friday, Saturday, Sunday, he did not come out early at all.
Okay. That's where everybody stopped. That's where everybody stopped. What? He didn't come out Friday, Saturday, Sunday? What? Oh, my God. They got another problem on their hands. Rafael Devers isn't going to come out. What an ass he is. He won't play first base. Oh, my God. Oh, I hate that guy. Ah, just like the Red Sox. That's already ruined. Okay. That's where a lot of people stopped. And that's where Boston stopped. Boston, that's what they said on WEI. That's where they stopped. Oh, my God. Devers, blah, 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 blah. What a pain in the ass he is. Right? Okay. Two things here. One, you're going to hear him say in just a second, but the first thing is he's had injuries. I've told you that. He has a back issue. He has a groin issue. I think I was calling it a hamstring. It's a hamstring, I think, and I was calling it a groin, something like that. You can see he's not running well. He's not moving well. Look, I'm not making an excuse for the guy. I don't work for the Giants. They don't pay me a dime. I'm not on the flagship of the Giants. What I hope to accomplish on this show is honesty. Some guy hit me up yesterday, and it's totally fine. And said that yesterday I was too negative on the show and somehow he equated that I wasn't prepared, which is, look, you can call me a lot of things, but prepared is not being prepared is not one of them. You can't say that about me. You can say a lot of things. You can rip a lot of things. I pride myself and for 30 years I have on being more prepared than anybody else because it's not fair to you if I'm not. So whatever. I didn't agree with that part of it. But if you want to come at me and say, I don't agree with this or agree with that, I'm fine with it, man. I'm not going to rip you back. All I said is specifically tell me what I wasn't prepared about. And sorry, but you're probably watching the wrong show. If you want me to blow smoke up everybody's ass and say how great the Niners or the Warriors or the, what, like, look, today is not a day for slander because Patrick Bailey's home run was awesome. So I'm not slandering anything, but what I'm saying is these aren't excuses. The dude and Bob Melvin said it, and he said it before this, before Bernsey and Will Clark were talking on the No Filter Network. He said right when he got here, yeah, he's not going to be working because he's working through some stuff. So he's working through a back. He's working through a hamstring. And you can see when he's running the bases, he's not nearly at 100%. He doesn't have his legs. So that's just a fact. That's not an excuse. That's just a fact. So he's not working in the field much because he's trying to get himself healthy. There's that. And that's well known, but again, ignored. All right, so Will Clark says he didn't come out for the 3 days. And that's where everybody stops. But we're not going to do that. Let's continue.
All, period. Not at all. Matter of fact, he didn't even hit on the field, right? And everybody's like, oh, my God. I'm so sorry, Will. I'm so sorry. I'm like, hey, don't worry about it. I said, I know what the fuck happened. I said, he didn't want to go out and be at first base and be 20 feet in front of their freaking dugout with, you know, what went on in Boston. And now he's working with me at first base.
Okay. That part was conveniently either ignored, edited, whatever the case may be. They stopped the video at a convenient point in Boston. What did he just say? Friday, Saturday, Sunday was the Red Sox. Where's first base located? Oh, it's located right in front of the opposing dugout. Rafael Devers didn't even come out to hit. So he wasn't ignoring Will Clark. He wasn't saying to the Giants, I don't want to play first base. I won't work at first base. Whether you agree with what he did or not, that's debatable. But he did not want to start a circus after saying he wouldn't play first base in Boston and then come out in front of the Red Sox dugout and more so in front of the Red Sox media and go and work with Will Clark and play working on first base. He didn't even come out for hitting before the game, which he always does. He didn't want to face the Boston media. Now, again, whether you want to say what an ass, what, you know, what a weenie, whatever, that's fine. You can have any opinion you want, but I can understand you saying that. But what Will Clark just said is, look, he didn't come out and it pissed him off, but he's saying it was Boston in town. He didn't want to deal with the Boston media. He didn't want to be working at first base right in front of the Boston dugout. He didn't even come out to hit because he didn't want to talk to people. He didn't want to be exposed to anything Boston, anything negative. And I can completely understand that. As a media member for 30 years, he didn't want to talk to jackasses like me. He didn't want to do it. So if it had been, just for the sake of conversation, the Marlins, the next series, if it had been whatever, any other team, the other 29 teams, he'd have probably went out and worked with Will Clark. That's what Will Clark just said. But nobody would know. That's not a fun story. That's not fun for Boston to pile on and say that, see, Rafael Devers isn't just a jerk here. He's a jerk in San Francisco, too. And they're going to regret that trade on the flagship of the Red Sox. That's what was said. Because they're defending the team. Of course they are. Now, look, I'm sitting here and I'm defending Rafael Devers. I have no reason to. If I thought that Rafael Devers was being an ass, I would say Rafael Devers is being an ass. And again, you can easily have the opinion that says he should have been out on the field working with Will Clark. It's disrespectful. But the fact that he didn't even come out for hitting told you he didn't want to deal with the Boston media. And he did not want to play, practice first base right in front of the Boston dugout. If that had been any other team, he wouldn't have cared. He didn't want to deal with the media. I just told you what the media is like in Boston. So they didn't tell the entire story. Shocking. They didn't tell the entire story. So let me go back to the beginning here. Let me just do this one more time. All right.
Coming from over there, stand this way. Throws coming from over there, stand that way. It wasn't going to be this big thing, right? And Friday, Saturday, Sunday, he did not come out early at all, period. Not at all.
All right. That's where it stopped. Here's the explanation, whether you buy it or not.
Now, in fact, he didn't even hit on the field. Right? And everybody's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, Will. I'm so sorry. I'm like, hey, don't worry about it. I said, I know what the fuck happened. I said, he didn't want to go out and be at first base and be 20 feet in front of their freaking dugout with, you know, what went on in Boston. And now he's working with me at first base. He didn't want to have to go through all that bullshit through the press and the media. And so...
Okay, so that's the explanation. Nobody's telling you that. That's the explanation. Now we're at the point of whether you buy that or not. I do, because I understand what the media is all about. He didn't want to deal with Boston. He wanted to get that behind him. He wanted to expose himself as little as he could to the Boston media. So he didn't come out and hit. He didn't come out and field. So whomever was the message sender to Will Clark should have told Will Clark, should have got the message to Will Clark, look, he's not even coming out to hit, let alone field. He doesn't want to deal with Boston. He doesn't want to be working at first base in front of the Boston dugout. Why don't you come after this series? So there's a miscommunication there. And look, you can say that it's not right and he should have stuck it to Boston, and that's cool, and I get it. But there's a big difference between what actually happened and what the narrative in Boston is, which is he's being a prima donna again, he's being an ass again, see, glad we traded him. There's a big difference between him saying, look, I don't want to deal with the Boston media. And now you're seeing he's working at first base. If he gets healthy, when he gets healthy, I should say, probably after the All-Star break, he's going to play first base. And hopefully, as we continue to chirp about, you know, the offensive positions, okay, Devers is at first. Adames is hitting it short. Chapman's at third. Ramos is good in left. Yaz is okay in right. And now you're dealing with, again, we're not ripping Patrick Bailey today. It's not right. Catcher, okay, you got to deal with that. Second base, you got to deal with that. Could you use an upgrade in right? You could, but who knows? But I would clearly look at second base, because I don't know that Schmidt or Fitzgerald, I mean, I've seen them. Can they do it? I mean, give it up to Casey Schmidt last night, by the way. He's completely getting buried in this. Hits a double right down the left field line. Now, if he can keep that going and he's going to be good defensively, maybe you're cooking with gas. Maybe you don't need a second baseman. But you've got, what's today, the 9th? What do we got, 22 days now? So essentially what you've got is 3 weeks to tell Casey Schmidt, dude, we don't care. You can strike out. You can go 0-for-4 and get the golden sombrero. We don't care. You're going to play second base. So they're going to have to find this out before the trade deadline if Casey Schmidt can play. By the way, how about baseball? Speaking of the golden sombrero, Patrick Bailey the other night struck out 4 times and dropped a pop fly, because we talked about it. And then he hits a walk-off inside the park home run, like, what, 2-3 days later? So anyway, and here's the rest of Will Clark. Now, this is the part that everybody got on, because he's like, he better get his ass there next time. See, this is the part, again, they cut out that middle part of the explanation of why he wasn't on the field, and they went from, he blew me off, and he better get his ass in there next time. And they cut out this middle part. So here's the end. Oops, sorry.
Anyway, so I completely understand. But Rafael Devers, the next time I'm in San Francisco, your ass will be on the field at first base. Just letting you know that. Just from the
But if he's not going to go out, he's going to tell you.
Hey, look, even if I got to go grab you by the fucking back of the neck and drag your ass out there, you will be.
See, that's the Will Clark we know. So that middle part was taken out. So the front part of he blew me off, Then there's the explanation. Everybody ignored that or cut it out or edited it out. Then the last part of Will Clark saying, I'm going to pull him out there by myself if I have to. I'll pull his fucking ass by, you know, by his neck or whatever. So those two parts were conveniently talked about. The middle part of he didn't want to come out for the Boston media. Not only did he not field, he didn't hit. And Will understanding that, because he didn't exactly have the greatest relationship with the media, that part was cut out. That part was edited out. So the two parts, the first part, the third part, were like, oh my God, you hear Will Clark? And then the part where he explained and understood why Devers wasn't out there, and Devers wasn't even out there to hit because Boston was in town, the Boston media was in town. Again, you can either buy or not buy that, but that's the explanation. So I'm not worried about Rafael Devers. And when he gets healthy, he's going to hit more. He's going to play first base. There's not a rift. But if Boston wants to make one, that's fine. Look, you made a bad trade. You made a bad trade. I mean, that's just what happened. I don't know if you've seen this. I like Kyle Harrison, man. I'm not here to rip him, but this guy covers the AAA team there. Woosta. Harrison just gave up. This was yesterday. Home run, double, home run in the first inning of his AAA Woosta game against Rochester. Harrison has given up 7 homers in 34 innings in AAA this season. He's been working on a few new pitches. See, and that was one of the reasons I told you this. When Harrison left, I said, Kyle Harrison with 2 pitches cannot, you cannot be a 2-pitch starting pitcher in Major League Baseball. It's not going to happen. So he's got to work on some pitches. That's what they're doing. He's not even in Boston. He's not with the Red Sox because they picked him up and they went, okay, guy used to be the top prospect, top left-handed prospect in baseball, but he's either going to be a reliever with those 2 pitches, or if we're going to make him a starter, he's got to get a couple more pitches going. And that's what they're doing right now. He's working in Worcester on some new pitches so that he can be a starter. If he can't be a starter, if he can't master those pitches, then he's a reliever. And so you traded a reliever, James Tibbs, a dartboard arm, and Hicks for Devers. And somehow Boston is trying to make that like, they got a problem. They got a problem with that guy. It's like, look, man, spin it all you want. That's highway robbery. So whatever. So anyway, do with that what you will. It is great to see you. Konnichiwa, Joji. Good to see you. Good morning, good morning, good morning. It is great to see you. I'm not mad at Will Fleming. I'm not mad at Will Fleming because I know how it works back there. I know how it works in Boston. I also know how it works when you work for a team. Like, he's going to go on WEEI and he's going to defend the organization. I totally understand that. And I have no issue with it whatsoever. What I have an issue with is when someone says something at that level who's got credibility like he does, then what happens is then that's conveniently forgotten by everybody. Did you hear what Will Fleming said? Well, that's what went around yesterday. Did you see what he said? But nobody played the Will Clark part, which is where it comes from. And when they did, or if they did talk about it, they talked about the first part. He blew me off. They talked about the third part. I'm going to drag his ass onto the field. They didn't talk about the middle part, which is the Red Sox were in town, and not only did he not come out to field with me, he didn't come out to hit, which he always comes out to hit, but he didn't want to deal with the Boston media. Now, you can say that he shouldn't have done that, and I get that, but there's an explanation in there, and you can either call it an explanation or an excuse. To me, it's an explanation. To some, it's an excuse. Totally get it. Totally get it. That's where and then it comes in. I'm just trying to give you all the information. That's all. I hope Harrison figures it out. By putting that up onto the screen, I'm not trying to dog Kyle Harrison at all. I like Kyle Harrison. Love's too strong a word. I like Kyle Harrison. Like I said, he'd been on my show many times. He's a really good guy. I hope he figures it out. I hope he becomes Zach Wheeler, you know, and I hope Giants fans go, ah, I like him. But at the time they made the trade, he's a 2-pitch pitcher who is not sure he's in a rotation in baseball unless, you know, it's a lesser team. But right now he's a 4-5 starter who Boston's trying to say, we got to resurrect you to justify this trade. So go down to AAA, work on some pitches. We want you to be a starter. We don't want our main piece for Rafael Devers to be a reliever, a 2-pitch reliever. We don't want that. So that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to I'm not going to say justify the trade, but they're trying to maximize the value of Kyle Harrison, which is get him a couple of pitches. That's all. And so we'll see. But I don't want it to come across like I don't like the kid or I don't want him to be successful, because I do. I like him. So anyway, all right, that's what I wanted to do. I just wanted to get across that whole thing on Rafael Devers. If you missed that, go back, or I will, right after the show, I put chapters down here, right below the show down here, and there'll be chapters, and you can just click on whatever you want. So I explained the Devers thing. I hadn't heard anybody explain it that way. I hadn't seen anybody actually play the clip of Will Clark with our good friend Eric Burns on the No Filter Network. So just wanted to make sure that if we're nothing here, we are accurate. All right. Clark Devers talked about Verlander. Big start today. Dodgers are sucking. It was the Astros first. Now it's the Brewers. The Giants are winning 5 games of the Dodgers, and that's where my line is. If you're over, if it's more than 5 games, nah. But now you're getting into the fact that they've struggled for a bit here, and if the Giants can get the win today, stay within at least 5 games of the Dodgers. Now the Dodgers are coming in for 3. Now you're cooking with a little bit of gas here. All right. So that's the baseball side of things. Before I move on to other things, any more thoughts on either Bailey's inside job, a Devers situation, Verlander, all those kind of things? Anything else? Should I play the fan cam one more time? No, that's the end of it. I want the end of it. I want this. The one guy yelled, "See ya," a little too early. Drunk guy. Get it back on the field. Come on. There you go. Very cool. Yeah, I love the one guy goes, "See ya," and it's like, dude, that's going to Triple's Alley. Nice ricochet. Beautiful ricochet. Baseball gods are ricochet is what they got right there. So absolutely great. So there you go. All right, anything else baseball-wise, and then we will move on to some other things on the list today. But that was a good time. That was awesome, man. And like I said, there will be no negative speak of Patrick Bailey for today. Great stuff. That was fun last night. All right, that is the Giants story. Again, today, Justin Verlander, Phillies, and then Dodgers, then All-Star break, and then it gets tough again, Toronto and the Mets. So they get no break here. The Giants. So it'd be nice to see Justin Verlander get something done today. All right. As far as NBA is concerned, there is nothing new unless something has happened while I've been on the air on Kuminga. We will probably get nothing new. They're going to meet next week at the, or later this week, I should say, in Vegas at the Summer League. Both sides are going to sit down. That's going to be interesting because you're hearing more and more, oh, he's going to stay, he's going to stay, he's going to stay. I told you yesterday, one update was a friend of mine in Utah. They've got a big trade exception. That could be possibly something that he could fit into. So we'll see. I just have this sneaking suspicion that, you know, things change really quick. Oh, there was a trade here. There was a move there. There was a trade exception there. And all of a sudden, something opens up for the guy. And I think that Jonathan Kuminga would rather go to Brooklyn or Utah or somewhere like that and stink and win 20 games, but see what he could do with his career than he would have the Warriors do what they've been doing, which is we promise one day this is going to be your team. One day this is going to be your team. 2 years from now, when Curry and Butler and Draymond are gone, this will be your team. And he's like, ugh, you keep saying that. So we'll see. Let me do this before, because Pine just pops up on the supers. And remember, if you want to get your questions, comments, or thoughts on the show, just hit me with a super, and it is a fine way to support the program. MLB to use the challenge system at the All-Star game. I did see that. 2 things on that. And thanks, Pine, for reminding me of that. Can't wait. Can't wait to see the challenge system. For a lot of people who didn't see it, haven't seen it in minor league baseball, it's instantaneous. It's just like boom, boom. Tap the top. They check it. By the time the pitcher catches the ball, it's either confirmed or reversed. I mean, it's that fast. So there's no excuse not to use it. And then the second thing I saw yesterday, and I think was this in The Athletic, where basically players have said they don't trust the robo umps and say that the regular umps are better than you think. And I get it. The regular umps are better than you think. But why not, in this critical part of the game, just get it right? And here's the thing. The reaction to – I remember my dad telling me this one time. Story time, everybody. People by nature hate change, right? We all do. We all hate change. Like, things are going fine. What's the big deal? What, you know? Now, look, if something's going wrong, yeah, you got to change. But if by day by day by day by day by day, we don't want things to change. That's just human nature. So I've told you this story before, not this specific story, but my dad was on his license plate said Fryman. A lot. You've eaten French fries. I promise you. My dad passed away about 10 years ago, but you in your life, you have probably eaten French fries that my dad somehow had a hand in. He was one of the major, major distributors of French fries in this country. And so it was an Idaho license plate that said Fryman. And he was a distributor, and he would get fries to many, many major markets. I told you this before. We would eat at a certain restaurant or something, and then we'd have to go back to the back of the restaurant and dump. I'd have to dumpster dive because he's like, get in there and grab like a box of find the French fries that this certain restaurant was using so that he could write down, you know, could he go steal that business? Like, and he would find out how many pounds of French fries they were using a year and if it's worth it and how much money he can make off it and all this kind of stuff. I would have to dumpster dive into these places and find the box of what French fries they were using, right? So that's my dad. That's what he did. He was fry man. And I don't mean acid. I mean French fries. So one time he had a product, and it normally, I'm just throwing it out there, it was one of these, but it had like red ink, right? The box had red ink on it. And for some reason at the potato plant, I don't know why, but there was a screw up and the ink on the box was blue for a time. And everybody lost their shit. Everyone was freaking out. How are these fries different? What's going on? I'm going to reject these fries. What's going on? My dad's like, look, there was an issue at the plant. It's supposed to be red ink. I understand that. It's blue ink. It's nothing different. They're the same things. Like for months, we were dealing with that. It's blue ink. It's blue ink. It's blue ink. Same thing. Fry them up. Look at them. They're the same fries. It says right on the box of the same fries. It's just there was a screw up and it was. So people hate change. People hate change. It could be the most subtle, small change. People hate change, right? So that's just what it comes down to. I mean, just people absolutely positively hate change. So how I'm equating that to the players, because Pine Needle says they're MLB to use the challenge system at the All-Star game. Everyone's cool with that. The Robo Ump thing, which we've yelled and screamed, and speaking to Eric Burns, he's a big time proponent of it. I've talked about it with him a million times. I like Robo Umps. It puts umps out of business. I understand there's a human nature. I do love the human nature. I don't need things to be 100%, but I think that when it comes to balls and strikes, it should be right. And what it could actually do, and again, they hate the change because right now, I talk about this all the time. Mike Kruko at the beginning of every broadcast for the Giants has to say he's a low ball guy. He's a, you know, he'll give you the edges. He won't. He'll give you the block on the plate. He won't. He's a high ball guy. His, as I told you yesterday, his strike zone breathes. No, there's one strike zone, man. It's not open to interpretation. And so what would eventually happen with players, with hitters, they would get used to the robo ump because it would be a consistent strike zone. You wouldn't have to know, oh yeah, Phil Cuzzy's behind the plate tonight or this guy or that guy. I got to remember, what does he do? And then early in the game, it's like, what's he giving me? A robo ump would just be like, now at the beginning, you'd have to get used to it. There'd be a lot of bitching and moaning, no doubt. But from game to game, it's the consistency. Why do you go to certain restaurants? Because you know what you're going to get, right? You know, even, I don't know, McDonald's fries, speaking of fries, you know that I don't care if it's here or Delaware, you're going to get pretty much the same fry. It's you know the consistency of it. So at the beginning, because they know all the umpires now, they'd be like, oh man, what's the robo-ump going to do? And early returns are that the robo-ump has a pretty tight strike zone, but you'd get used to it. And then the same strike zone that was in San Francisco is in LA or New York or Chicago or Texas or whatever. Then they all get used to it. But the initial I hate change as a human being, they would hate. They wouldn't like it. Oh, we hate change. Where's the umpire? This is freaking me out. But once you get used to it, you love it. I'll give you another example. Years ago in Vegas, I was at the Excalibur. And what they had done was I love playing poker. I'll play all night. I love the fact that you could look at your cards then bet versus like 21 or something. It's like, okay, put your bet down. I just got a 13. This sucks. So you can bet after you see your cards. I love it. Now everyone, you know, a couple of times you got to put in your antes and stuff like that, your high, your low, whatever. But what they did at Excalibur was they replaced the blackjack dealers. I loved it. It was an electronic. And so what you did was you got dealt your cards. You could hit this little button. You could just see the corners of it. I thought it was the coolest thing because certain dealers, they can't reach certain places. They're slower. Some are faster, slower. You know, they're inconsistent, but that's kind of like an umpire to me. Once they made it all electronic, and this was just for a short period of time, they had these tables and they were all electronic. And now y'all sat around it just like a regular, it was a regular poker room, but they were experimenting with the electronic poker table. And I loved it. It was consistent. It was fast. You could play more hands. There was no like intricacies of the dealers, but then they did away with it after a few months because there's a union for the card dealers or whatever. And then they pulled them out. And I was like, ah, because I thought it was cool. And the Excalibur's junk, but I would have played more at the Excalibur because I love the electronic poker tables. Just loved it. It was all consistent. And people would sit down and they hadn't played it before. And they were like, you gave them like an hour at the electronic poker table. And it was like, oh my God, this is awesome. Like we all loved it. And then all of a sudden they were gone and you went back to the dealers. And I could be wrong because I'm not in Vegas all the time. I think they're gone. I don't think they have them anymore at all. But you know, people bitched and moaned about it and I loved it. But it's the same kind of a thing. Like they would eventually get used to robo-umps. There's no question. But at the beginning, the zone would be tighter. The pitchers would hate it. The batters would get pissed off. It's, you know, they look back at the umpire and it's, you know, and there's still an umpire back there because they've got to relay the balls and the strikes, but it's not them calling it. So anyway, I'm a big fan of it. I want it to be there. I want them to have it, but players, I saw this yesterday, and this is why with Pine bringing up the MLB to use the challenge system, is that yesterday there was a poll and players don't want the robo-ump. Yeah, they don't now because you hate change. Eventually, if they put in the robo-ump and players got used to it and said, damn, now I know what the strike zone is. I don't have to look behind me and go, who's umpiring today? Oh, yeah, he's a highball guy. You know, I know what a strike is. Then what you would innately all of a sudden after a few times with that umpire, okay, I know what a strike is. I actually know what a strike is from here to New York. And it's the same thing all the time. Now, they're saying that the consistency of it is not right, so you can't roll it out until it's ready to go. But as we talked about yesterday, and as Pine brings out here, at least the challenge system. Like, use the technology, at least the challenge system, right? At least got to do that. So anyway, I just want to rant about how people hate change, but they really do. They really do. Like, my dad was just like, it's blue ink. It's the same. They're like, we don't believe you. We're going to reject these fries. And when I say they're going to reject these fries, this is more fried knowledge than you're ever going to want to know in your entire lifetime. But he would sell train car loads of fries at a time to some of these major companies, you know, the McDonald's and everything. To put that in perspective, that's 48,000 cases in one train load. Okay. One train car could hold a refrigerated train could hold 48,000 cases. And so they were blue ink and they were supposed to be red ink and it was the same damn fry. And he had people calling him going, you know, they're in the middle of Iowa going, hey, we're not going to accept these fries because there's blue ink on them and we're going to reject 48,000 cases. And my dad had to get on a plane and be like, these are the same, and pull something out of one of these cases of fries and fry them up and say, look, here's your old fries. Here's your new fries. Tell me if they're any different. They're like, no, they're not any different. It's like, okay, we just had a small glitch at the thing. Next week, you're going to have red ink again. They just screwed up and somebody put blue ink. It was because what they're doing at these places is, you know, your mozzarella sticks, your this, your that. There's all sorts of things being, you know, put in cases. And so that somebody didn't put in the red ink. They put in the blue ink, but they had the same thing. So it was his logo and his stuff, but somebody forgot to change the ink out. And so they cased all these fries and my dad's like, look, it was just a mistake. Next week you'll have red ink, but people are going to reject them because they hate change that much. And it's like, it's blue ink instead of red. Same thing. People hate change. There, we learned something today. All right. Let's see what else we have today. A true story, man. He had to fly out there and be like, these are the same. They're like, nope, we don't believe you. We're going to reject 48,000 cases of fries. My dad's like, that would not be good. Proctor says, I need to call out players more. They have a great game. Yeah, I think did I go off on Patrick Bailey? I probably did. And like I said, there'll be no Patrick Bailey slander today. He gets a reprieve today. And I don't know, our lineup's out today. Bruce Bochy's thing was, if you hit a home run, you had to be in the lineup the next day. I wonder if Patrick Bailey's like, look, I ran those bases. I'm tired. I don't want to. I don't want to do that. Let me see here. Let me look at the lineup's got to be out right now, right? Let's see. What do we got? It's still all Bailey all the time. I don't know. We'll find out. Anyway, let me see here. Because he's got to be in the lineup, doesn't he? I don't know. It's all Bailey stuff now. I don't see anything else. Anyway, whatever. No big deal. Yeah, it's a good point. I will take 100% credit for that inside the park home run. that's good. Remember, supers get you 100% guaranteed on the show. Closing in on 7. Yeah, this morning I think it was at 6998. So hopefully we can get over 7,000 subscribers at some point. Please tell all your friends and enemies. That would be outstanding. Thank you, Fuji. And we will see you on Friday. Although somebody texted me or hit me up on social media somehow, I can't remember, and said that Krug was saying he was going to be at the game on Friday. So I got to get with Krug and figure out what the heck we're doing on Friday night. But yeah, I think we're two away. Thank you. Thank you, Fuji, for that. I think we're two away. So thank you to Fuji today, Vrock, and Pine Needle for supers so far. Much appreciated, gentlemen. Jokic, let me just hit up, because like I said, there's nothing new on Kuminga. I gave you a little bit on Kuminga yesterday, potentially the Jazz, but we'll see. Then they're going to meet, I think, later this week in Vegas, so we'll get a little bit more on that. This Jokic thing is going to make people go absolutely bonkers. And again, people won't read between the lines. So Jokic told the Nuggets he's not going to sign an extension. He's eligible for a 3206 right now, but he's not going to sign the extension because, first of all, he's got more money than he could ever spend in 10 generations. But next year, he could get a 4-year extension and more money. So he's going to play for only $62.8 million this year, and then he can get a 4-year deal worth more if he just waits a year. Most players freak out and are like, I want the money now. But he's probably got oodles and oodles of money. Remember, he's into like horse racing and all these different kind of things. I mean, he doesn't live this extravagant life. So he's like, well, I'll just do a 4-year deal next year and get more money, which makes a ton of sense. Now, that's not what most people are going to hear. Most people are going to stop right here. Nikola Jokic tells the Nuggets he won't sign an extension this summer. It's going to stop. Just like I told you about the Will Clark thing. And no one's going to go to this part where next year, if he just waits a year, he could get more money. They're going to stop right here. Jokic tells the Nuggets he won't sign an extension this summer. Oh, my God! Warriors fans will freak out. Everybody who needs size is going to freak out. What it would take to get Jokic. Like I guarantee that's going to be all over your timeline today. But he's doing it so that he can get more money next offseason. Because what does he need an extension for right now? He's got oodles of money. So anyway, just giving you a little fair warning. Let's see how that works out. I bet that everyone freaks out. Not everyone, but you know, a lot of people are going to freak out over it. So anyway, there's that. Top 10 edge rushers. So we talked about this yesterday, ESPN, and I'm not giving them any grief whatsoever, because what happens is the NFL, and I think you would agree with me on this, the NFL more than any other sport has the offseason nailed. Just nailed. All right, Super Bowl happens, that's overblown. Okay, it's the offseason. Now free agency speculation starts. NFL draft overtakes everything, 800 million mock drafts, all this kind of stuff, staying in the buzz, you know, free agency hits, staying in the buzz, constantly in the buzz. Now we do some OTAs, this and that. And then there's a dead period that we're right in the middle of right now that about ends in about 2 weeks. And then everybody starts to freak out. So we're kind of in that zone where it's almost like when you're a kid and it's Christmas and you're like, oh, we're 2 weeks away. This is like December 12th or something, you know? If you're an adult, and it's all of a sudden, it's like, oh my God, the NFL. But what this is the only real dead period, this 40 days, really. And we talked about it with D'Amino Lenore. Like, you got this 40 days that teams are scared of because they're like, okay, it's actually really the season right now. And if somebody gets in trouble or gets hurt or does something stupid, then we can't really get them out of it. So it's this 40 day window, and we're about halfway through that. And so now what starts to happen is ESPN, NFL Network, they don't really have anything. They've run all their off-season stuff. And now they've got a 2-week period where they're like, hey, let's start doing lists, because people love lists. And even people like me who are like, I hate lists. I don't like Mount Rushmores. I don't care about anybody's list. Who cares what anybody says about a list? But for some reason, we can all say that we don't like lists. We can all say that we don't like Mount Rushmores. We can all say who cares about what that guy's opinion is, because that's what it is. And it's there to trick you and to hook you and to do all these different things. We all know that. But then we see a list and we go, ah, can't believe they said that. So these are personnel people. And as I said, Christian McCaffrey is the 5th best running back in the league. I think that he's going to outperform that. what was it, defensive tackles yesterday. The Niners don't have anything there, so they're not part of that position, those positions. But edge rusher, and I always thought this would be a fun one because everyone's like, well, Nick Bosa. So let me see. It's in execs coaches. Here we go, right here. So we're at the edge rushers, right? Not a Ryan Clark guy. This one's hard to argue, to be completely honest with you. So Myles Garrett, and it says these are NFL personnel people. So highest ranking one, lowest ranking four. I don't know who could put Myles Garrett four. Last year he was one. This year he's one. I got no issue with that. You let me know. TJ Watt, highest ranking one, lowest ranking three. Last year's ranking two. I have no issue with that. TJ Watt's great. This is where it gets kind of interesting. Micah Parsons, one highest ranking. Somebody had him one. Somebody had him six. Last year's ranking three. This is where I think Bosa could be in the conversation. Parsons is really dominant. They've got to sign him an extension. Max Crosby, I think probably Max Crosby's third, right? Max Crosby, just a major pain in the ass for teams. Highest ranking one, lowest ranking. I don't know how anybody could have Max Crosby six. I mean, that's pretty ridiculous. So Crosby's four, and then Nick five. And I think that's about where Nick goes. Now, having said that, so highest ranking three, lowest ranking. I don't know how you could have Nick Bosa unranked in the top. Remember, top 10. This is top 10. So somebody had him unranked. Probably somebody that doesn't like him in Seattle or LA or Arizona. But anyway, there you go. Some personnel director actually had Nick Bosa outside the top 10. That person should be fired. But fifth, I could see Nick fifth. I mean, could you make a case from above Crosby? I don't know about right now. Parsons, I think they're on a different, are on kind of a par. But here's the big thing about Nick Bosa to me is that whether it's Bryce Huff across from him, whether it's Mikel Williams, who I think is going to take a minute, whether it's one of the, you know, the rookies inside pushing the pocket, I don't know if there's anybody on this list that gets less help than Nick Bosa. Now, maybe Crosby does because Christian Wilkins went down, so they don't have a great defensive line. Parsons has gotten help in Dallas. They don't have a great defensive line. TJ Watt, they got a great system. He gets help. Myles Garrett doesn't have a ton of help in Cleveland, but Nick Bosa gets no help. He's doubled on every play. Nick, a couple of years ago, was the defensive player of the year. He could be that again. He's only 27. He's in the height of his career. He's right there. And with pass rushers, it's not just about sacks. Like you look right here, 22.2% pass win rate, up 4 points. They're talking about a get off, all those kind of things, whatever. Since 2021, 121 quick pressures under 2.5 seconds, the fifth most. So he's about five. Four players have at least 60 sacks, 10 fumbles since 2019. Watt, Garrett, Bosa, Hendrickson. So he's right in that range. So could you make a case that he was up to maybe three? Yeah. You could put him ahead of Parsons, maybe ahead of Crosby, although Crosby's really good. You couldn't put him ahead of Garrett, I don't think. I don't think you can put him ahead of TJ Watt, but he's really good. And this year would be interesting because let's say Bryce Huff has a great year. That's going to be huge. I don't know if the defensive line with these young guys can get enough push to help Nick Bosa out. Because in 2019, when you had obviously the two big Oregon furs in the middle in Buckner and Armstead, and then you actually had Dee Ford when he was healthy, it was like, well, what do we do? Every single play, and they don't take this into this equation, every single play is doubled and tripled. And at the very least, it's a tight end chipping him. So is Nick Bosa gotten the eye-popping numbers? Why they said 19 and a half sacks over the last 2 years, mild production. I would do that, but personnel people who are the ones who make this list should know that sacks aren't the only thing. Hendrickson six, he's underrated. Hutchinson's coming off a big injury. Will Anderson, that was a nice job by Texans to get him. Hunter, so look at that. They got two guys on there, and then Jared Verse. That's a pain in the ass, and he was just a rookie last year. So anyway, there you go. There is your daily dose of lists that ESPN is going to put out because we're in the dead part of the year. But do know, and the reason I'm bringing this up, do know that we will have great coverage of 49ers training camp right here on John Lund Unleashed. I'll go down there. We'll get stuff. We'll get video, all that kind of stuff. So we'll cover training camp, and we have not forgotten about it. So just so you know. Yeah, I'll have some of that for you tomorrow. I saw Brock's interview, but I want to be able to focus on it a little bit more. And with the Patrick Bailey home run, I was like, okay, we're going to talk a ton about Bailey's home run. So anyway, there you go. Yeah, I hope so. I hope Nick has a great year because he's really good and he's got to get some help. And some of this stuff is just not in his control. I mean, it's just like dude's doubled, tripled, chipped, all this kind of stuff. Yeah, he would have loved Brosa. He was already talking about it. Here comes Brosa. But he ended up in Buffalo, I think, Joey. Plus, he's going to get hurt anyway. So let's be honest, right? He's going to get hurt anyway. All right. A couple of weeks away. And then we'll get into heavy, heavy doses of NFL. Unless the Giants continue to stay in this thing. And then we'll see. All right. I think that's it. Episode 186. We're going to do a sweet, clean, family-friendly Caboose Pistol here in a second. But Bailey's inside job. Will that get him going? Clark endeavors. I explained that. Nobody really has. Verlander today. Dodgers are sucking, and then they come into town. Then it's the All-Star break. Then it's Toronto and the Mets, so things don't get easy. Jokic's overreaction is going to happen. Top 10 edge rushers, Bosa 5. I don't have an issue with that. Random things like ink on potato boxes. What else do we have? It is that. Well, I'll warn you about the caboose in just a second, but let's do it. It is time. No, that's not what I'm looking for. It is time on a, what is today? Wednesday, hump day Wednesday, for the Sweet Clean Family Friendly Caboose Pistol.
John Lund Unleashed presents the Caboose Pistol.
Wedged in the crack of her buttocks.
Somehow, someway, Lundo thinks this is the best way to leave a final impression on you for the day.
The old Caboose Pistol, everybody has one.
Did you say Caboose
Pistol? I know some women who could hide a machine gun in there.
Yeah.
Leave me out of this, you weirdo. Here's John.
I always get a kick out of the one guy who goes, I know some women that can fit a machine gun in there. But then the other guy goes, yep. It's like, what do you mean, yeah? Like, you do? No, you don't. The guy goes, yep. WGN-TV, look it up. Caboose Pistol. You just look up Caboose Pistol. Pop and Lund come up, but then it is from WGN years and years ago, and that's when we called the end of our show the Caboose Pistol. And it stuck. So there you go. Hang on before I get to today's sweet, creepy, heavy, friendly Caboose Pistol. This is hilarious. Brock says, please talk some shit about Verlander. Yeah, that's a great point because I was talking shit, I think, about Bailey yesterday, and then he comes through. So, look, Verlander's pitching today. He's been garbage. He's been dog shit. I mean, $15 million, you could have just wiped your ass with that. It's terrible. He's been awful. Doesn't even have a win. Verlander's terrible, awful. They need to cut him. I don't care who's the fifth starter. Can't be Verlander. All right, hopefully that works. Hopefully that works and he has a great, great day today. But that's a heck of a, that's a good point by you, Brock. I talk shit about someone, they perform well. Verlander sucks. All right. all right. I'm going to give you a fair warning here. Good Van Halen song, but fair warning. I'll give you a fair warning here. If you're drinking coffee, if you're eating, if you're thinking about eating, if you've got food on the table, just move it aside for just a second. Do not eat. Do not drink. Do not consume. Put everything away for just a second. All right. I'm going to give you 3 seconds. All right. 3, 2, 1. All right. I gave you fair warning. Just going to let you know. So, like I said, what happens? Sometimes what's happening with the Sweet Clean Family Friendly Caboose Pistol is I'll see a video, right? I don't know, Bob Melvin talking, which or maybe it was a Will Clark, or maybe it was the fan cam home run of Patrick Bailey, whatever it is. And then the next video will pop up, right? The next video will pop up. And then, so that's what happened again here. And I've done this a few number of times where it's like, I'll have a video, I'll screenshot it and I'll use it for the show. And then like the next video that pops up, I'll watch and I'm like, oh my God, this would be good for the show too. So this is what happened yesterday. So I was on X and I don't know which video I was grabbing. Maybe it was the Will Clark one with Bernsey, but, and then the next video pops up. So I didn't know this about rhinos. What they do when they defecate, they like to mark their territory. I've never seen this. It's like a helicopter. Again, I warned you, don't eat. Here it comes. When hippos defecate, they deliberately spray their dung over in as large area as possible, wagging their tail energetically and using it as a sort of paintbrush. I thought it was a propeller. But I didn't know this. Did you? Oh, not rhinos, hippos. So could you imagine? Like, it looks like they're on some kind of a safari, right? And this hippo just decides, here we go. And, you know, dogs do that too. Like, you walk your dog around the block and it'll pee and, you know, it marks its territory, it's thinking. But my God, man. I mean, this is like serious. Like, get out of the way. Like, they're going to the bathroom. It's like, okay, I'm marking my territory. It looks like a fan or something. Like, shit really hit the fan. Like, here, you want to see it again? Look at that thing. I mean, that's spraying. It's going everywhere. Like, that is disgusting. There you go. Did you know, fun fact, when hippos defecate, they deliberately spray their dung over as large area as possible, wagging their tail energetically and using it as some sort of a paintbrush. I don't know if that's a paintbrush as much as it is like a fan or a helicopter, but okay. So you learn something new every day. Don't say that I never taught you anything on the show, because I had no idea. I had no idea that that's what hippos did. So they don't just like, hang on a minute. Like, you know, human beings are like, okay, you know, I need a minute. They're like, oh yeah? They make a big spectacle out of it. And the guy across from them, the hippo across from him, like, ooh, impressive. So anyway, to each their own. I knew we'd get good stuff off of this. This is solid. So it says, so that's the part they left out of the hungry, hungry hippo game. Apparently so. Apparently so. That is nasty. Yeah, that is really nasty. And I'm sorry that it ended the show that way, but that's just like, you know, when you're looking for stuff for the Sweet Clean Family from the Caboose Bus, you're like, oh my God. So I think I got the video of Will Clark, and then that just popped up afterwards. I'm like, oh, this has got to be a Caboose Pistol. I had no idea. I had no idea that's what hippos did. Like, watch out. And I mean, it's not like the guy warned anybody. You know, it's not like they went, hey, a fair warning here. You might want to clear out. And that stuff's just flying. Like, damn. So, like I said, to each their own. To each their own. I know. I feel really bad. I feel really bad, Naomi. I apologize. That's low-hanging fruit right there. But, you know, that's the first thing I saw yesterday. And I thought to myself, okay, we have to use that. Because I didn't know that. I didn't know that's what they did. You know, certain animals, it's like, I know. You know, like my dog, I think, is disgusting. Every time I clean the backyard, like backyard's in a good space, I'll walk out of here today and it's like, come on, dude. Give me a break. Anyway, we don't need to get into that conversation. It's nasty enough. And I gave you a fair warning. I tried to give you a fair warning at least. Maybe you didn't believe me. But anyway, there you go. That is your Sweet Clean, not so clean, family-friendly Caboose Pistol. And that is episode 186, Bailey's Inside Job. Will that get him going? Clark Endeavors, the real story. Verlander, Dodgers coming in after today. Jokic overreaction. He can get more money next year, but everybody's going like, oh my God, he's available. Top 10 edge rushers. Bosa 5. Do you agree with that? Garrett first. Miles Garrett. TJ Watt. Parsons. Max Crosby. Bosa. I'd probably move Crosby up, is what I would probably do. He might be 2. I mean, that dude is just, he's nasty. In fact, I think Mahomes said the other day that he was the biggest pain in the ass. And he said it in a nice way. Yeah, that was kind of shitty. But I did give fair warning. And so I feel okay about it. the poop algorithm. wonderful. All right, that'll do it for today, Wednesday edition. Please do remember that to keep those alerts on. We'll have stuff throughout the day. If there's breaking news, anything like that, we'll make sure that we're back. We always put stuff out throughout the day, so make sure that you have those alerts on. Also, please hit us with a like before you get out of here. Speaking of algorithms, that helps the algorithm, so that would be outstanding. And please, we're close to 7,000. Hopefully, by the end of the show, we're there. But please make sure that you subscribe to the channel. So if you're watching on X at John Lund Radio, if you're watching on Instagram at John Lund Radio, maybe you're watching on Facebook, LinkedIn, any of those other places, please make sure that you subscribe to the channel and don't miss anything. Inside Job by Patrick Bailey. That is the big story of the day as the Giants get the win. Afternoon baseball, then the Dodgers come in. And again, if anything breaks, we will come back. Oh, hang on a minute. Make sure that we have everything. That's an interesting question. Would Verlander have any trade value? Sure he would. Of course he would. I don't think they're going to trade him because they just don't have any organizational depth that I think they trust. If Harrison and Hicks are around, like we've said before, maybe. But I do think he'd have some trade value. I think, you know, when he's gone to Houston about 19 times, I mean, I think they wouldn't mind having him back. But I would just say that right now, given that the Giants don't have a lot of organizational depth, I don't know that he would have trade value. Now, having said that, Verac, maybe they do trade for like a number 3 starter and they say, okay, we'd rather get, okay, our 3 starter and Roop is okay, and we'll make Birdsong the 5 and we feel good about that. But you need so much pitching depth to get through this thing that I'm not sure that they would trade Verlander. But to just answer your question straight up, I think there are teams who see the name Justin Verlander and need a, you know, look, most contending teams would need a 4-5 starter at this point. Nobody's really satisfied 1-5 with their rotations. Maybe there's a couple teams. But, you know, I told you this at the beginning of the year, even like the Dodgers, for example. You know, like, well, oh my God, look at this. Look at the staff they put together. Well, Snell's never healthy. Tyler Glasnow's never healthy. Like, you know, go through the, you know, Sasaki was supposed to be this big thing, right? He comes over. Roki Sasaki comes over. He's not pitching right now. So, yeah, it doesn't matter how good you think your staff is. You're 4-5 for 99% of the staffs in baseball. You could always upgrade, I think. And so I think you would have some value. I just don't know that the Giants have enough depth to be able to trade starting pitching right now. Thanks to Supers from Vrock today, from our good friend Fuji as well, and Pine Needle, talking about the Major League Baseball challenge system going to be used in the All-Star game. So that should do it for a Wednesday edition of the show, episode 186. Do remember, if you joined us late, that is totally fine. Comments, questions, thoughts right underneath the show right here. And what I'll do is we will right now, when we get off the air, we'll put this onto a podcast, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your favorite podcast. And then I will put right underneath here the chapters so that you can click on whichever topic you want to hit. So the Bailey's Inside Job, which we did a lot of stuff today, the Clark Devers, the Verlander, the Dodgers, the Jokic, the top 10 edge rushers, whatever it is you want to get into today. And I told some stories. You can click right to those in just a moment. So everybody have a great Wednesday edition. Thanks for hanging out for episode 186. Thanks for hanging out with John Lund Unleashed on YouTube. Please tell all your friends and enemies as we get near or are surpassing 7,000 subscribers. And I'd be certainly remiss to not thank you for tuning in, whether you're tuning in on a regular basis or every once in a while. Much appreciated your attendance in the show. Everybody have a great rest of your Wednesday.
Thanks for hanging out with John Lund Unleashed. We'll try to be better next time, though I wouldn't hold my breath. Please like and subscribe on the John Lund Unleashed Pod YouTube channel. Watch live shows weekdays at 8 a.m. on YouTube, Instagram, and X. And make sure to have your alerts on for shows throughout the day or night. All things Lund can be found at johnlundunleashed.com. johnlundunleashed.com.
Goodbye!